Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I need to beat you, Hugh. I need it more than anything you could possibly imagine. With all due respect. We've never sounded more breakbeat. Thank you, Sonic Architect Adam.
You're so welcome. I wish Limp Bizkit played to a click track. That was so hard. It was so hard to sync up, but we got there in the end.
It's very complex. Yeah. Hugh Carr is back, everybody.
Oh my God, that was incredible. Sorry.
Welcome to No Encore's Attitude Era, everybody.
Yeah, that's right. Finally. I noticed the listenership is up, so I decided, how do I stop that from happening? How do I drive all these people away? I know. Let's center an episode around wrestling and let's get really fucking niche with it. I promise, listener, whether you're new, old, young, carefree, whatever, hate wrestling, doesn't matter. It'll be fun. I promise it'll be fun. But we couldn't pass this opportunity up because WrestleMania XL took place last weekend. Mm-hmm. One man in the studio was in fact there. Mm-hmm. It's Hugh Carr. He's back. Hello.
I'm back. Hello. How are you getting on? I'm buzzing to be here. I haven't been here in...
You're just off a plane.
Literally just off a plane.
You haven't been here in a while.
I haven't been here since...
It's been a few months' time. I can't remember the last time.
Yeah, a few months, I think. I can't remember what the last episode
was. Turning into a regular at this stage.
I would want more regular... I can't even say the words. That's how excited I am about being a regular. I got off a plane at 6 a.m. as of the day of recording, so...
Now 20 to 7 p.m. in the studio. I really admire your dedication. I did say to you in advance, I was like, will you turn up?
Can I be honest? Can I be totally honest?
Please.
I forgot how time zones worked. And I was like, well, I'm flying back on Tuesday, so I'll be back Tuesday. So I'll have a full day's rest before I go into the studio. Forgetting that the way that time works, in that whenever you're 5 hours behind, that you would then be 5 hours ahead from where you were whenever you left that place. So I thought that I'd be landing on Tuesday night, except I was actually landing this morning. So I had totally forgotten that that was a thing. And I was like, oh, crap, that means I'm going to only have a few hours to prepare myself. But I was dedicated to the cause. And as I said to you before, I was like, there's actually no one else I'd rather talk to my experience about.
That's
than
right.
Yourself.
Yeah.
So.
And we're glad to. Look, all we need is you. You've done the homework anyway, because you're a very good boy. But, you know, you being here in the flesh is the most important thing. Mm-hmm. And that's later in the show. So we're going to be doing top five WrestleMania live performances. Now, for those of you who don't watch wrestling, they have a thing called WrestleMania. It's the biggest wrestling show of the year. Mm-hmm. It's never been bigger than it is right now. And they often have a musical guest, or two, or three, or more, or none at all. Mm-hmm. And you get these live performances here and there. Usually they kind of play a wrestler's entrance music to the ring and that kind of thing. Maybe there's a special song of who knows. And I kind of, we talked about it, and initially I kind of tasked you to pick notable ones, good and bad. However, I think you've just gone for bad ones.
I have just gone for bad ones, because
in fairness, there's quite a lot of them.
So I spent a day, the day before WrestleMania Part 2, the day of WrestleMania Part 2, I went through all the performances that have happened at WrestleMania over the past 40 years. And
sorry, this sounds like he went through, like, you know, like errors and errors and errors and errors of tape.
No.
Or like, you know, the kind of that bit in like a law film from the 90s when they go to the public library
and the boxes
and they go through the kind of the weird, like, you know, like digital reel. I know there's a word for it that I should know. But no, actually, there is a very handy page that you sent me as well. Lots of America the Beautiful in there, because it's that's what opens WrestleMania all the time.
Almost entirely America the Beautiful.
Yeah.
But there was loads of other links and names there. And I just went through all the. And there are good ones. There are genuinely ones that are actually quite cool, actually,
yeah.
And kind of like really capture a zeitgeist of what was going on at the time.
But that's not what the listener's here for. The listener wants trash.
Oh, so they want the worst. And there were some awful things.
It's all coming later in the show. And before we get to the top five, we will also hear about Hugh's trip to Philadelphia and the whole damn thing, because I'm very, very jealous. But first of all, I guess before we proceed with the show, it's patreon.com/noencore if you want to support this show. Thank you so much to everyone who does. We've had a few new patrons lately, and there is brand new bonus content. Adam's debut episode of the No Encore Album Club went up last Sunday. That will be a fortnightly affair, and we've recorded the next episode.
And the next episode.
Yeah, so where you can hold us to account, there will be regular content.
Yeah.
And I'm on the second episode, by the way, so I'm getting involved.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you until next week what that album will be and what that band will be, but I will say it's an act that we've rarely talked about on this show.
I had never heard of them before you mentioned
them
to me.
There you go. Yeah. I'm not starting with Nine Inch Nails. They're in the news section. patreon.com/noencore. Let's get to that news section.
You're a fucking newsman, Don. I ever tell you otherwise, you punch me in the face.
A worked punch, not a real punch, you
of
know,
course,
much
yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, much like John Cena and his great his great punching. Let's start with the news section. It's not quite news, but I did go to the cinema. I went to a press screening this week for a film that lands.
Presotech, as I like to call them.
That doesn't work.
Presotech.
Cinematech works.
Cinematech is
Presotech
great.
Does not work.
Yeah, okay.
It's going to shut it down.
Yeah. What about Pressorama? Would you accept Pressorama?
Neither of these are in any way acceptable.
Yeah.
But what is acceptable is the Motion Picture Challengers, which drops. Do films drop?
Drops.
Like albums? Drops.
Lands in all box offices.
Hits the Cinematheques. I think it's the 26th of April. It's the new one from Luca Guadagnino, who directed films like Call Me By Your Name, the Suspiria remake, and Bones and All. It stars Zendaya. And the reason I'm talking about this right now in a music podcast is Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross have done the score for it. And let me tell you guys, it's magnificent.
Oh, is it the best since The Social Network?
That's been the buzz. It's certainly the most propulsive and Social Network-esque in that it's basically dance music for the entire film.
Techno.
Just like, it's a sexy tennis movie.
Oh my God.
That is the movie. And the music is absolutely incredible. It's fantastic. I can't wait to hear it. None of it's out yet, so I assume it's going to come out in the next couple of weeks. So I can't even play you a snippet to be like, this is what it sounds like, but it's worth going to see the film for alone. And yes, look, I'm a fucking, an easy mark for these guys. We know this, but they, you know, I believe if I recall correctly, I left the Cinematheque press screening Went into the bathroom and there was another critic there and I just, you know, ebullient. Oh yeah, sorry, even better. Beforehand, right, I was so enamored that when I was gathering my things to leave it and the credits were on the screen and it flashed up, you know, music by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, involuntarily I blew a kiss at the screen.
Incredible. Fantastic.
Like CM Punk. And then,
well, bye-bye.
And then I like strutted into the bathroom and there was another credit there and I just, to no one, I just went, just miss once, Kings, I dare you. And I think he was like, what? And then I left. So yeah, we will play something else though involving the boys because they did this big GQ thing. Big GQ interview. It's online. I'd recommend reading it. And they also did one of those sit down things that you normally see actors do.
Yeah, going like through breaking down their work. Yeah.
Yeah, going through their iconic roles. Trent and Atticus did that. It's on YouTube. It's very good. And I have a little snippet here of them talking about working on The Social Network.
The site's live.
When we write music, it's coming from a place where its main intent is to have you feel a certain way. It's not coming from a love of melody and a joy of intricate chord progressions or technical wizardry. If you think of it in terms of the characters of the film and how they're feeling and what the put yourself inside it, which was what we did, then it was just intuition. I know what it feels like. In the case of the Zuckerberg character in Social Network, do I know what it's like to think something is so important to you, you treat everyone like an asshole and wonder if it was worth it in the end? I kind of know what that feels like, you know? I've been around Atticus, I've seen it, you know?
They're just so adorable, those two.
You know what? I know exactly what he's talking about when he says that as well. There is a documentary that's like I think a 3, maybe 4-parter called The Defiant Ones. Mm. It's a Netflix one that kind of highlighted the life and times of both Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine and their work that they did. But one of the kind of main cruxes of the documentary, spoilers for a documentary that came out like 3 years ago, is that Jimmy Iovine wanted to sign Nine Inch Nails to Interscope.
Yeah.
And they were on, I can't remember.
Nothing, I think they're on, or is that the same label? They're on the Null Corporate. They had their own thing going for a while.
Yeah, but
I should know this.
I think, as part of Interscope. Mm. So that was part of the deal that kind of came down. They were able to like sign bands and they did. But before that, they were on this record label that had them by the neck and was like refusing to let them go. So essentially what Trent Reznor said he was going to do was just be the most difficult motherfucker to work with ever. So like no record labels would come near him ever again. And there's a story of like where he met with Jimmy Iovine and Jimmy Iovine walked into the room that Trent Reznor had set up in like a hotel room and there were like hundreds and hundreds of candles just on the floor lit and he was like sitting in this dark corner of the room like some kind of vampiric like... like a hologram or something, I don't know. But
that's just Tuesday for him in the 90s.
That's clearly what he's referencing. Mm-hmm. When he says like, do I know what it's like to, you know, be in a room full of people or like be the, you know, be a fucking asshole for whatever reason. And it's 100% reference to that.
Yeah, it's also really all worked out because like Jimmy Iovine these days is Atticus Ross's brother-in-law, because that's
naturally
how that goes. And I will say as well, that GQ interview, which is worth looking up, both the online, the video version and the print version, there was a section in the GQ thing that really kind of resonated with me when I read it about a week ago. Resonated, you could say. And I'm just going to quote from now really, really quick. In their years of collaborating with each other, both men have found some mutual reassurance, a little lift. Reznor gestured towards Ross. Quote, I remember something he said to me. I don't know if you want me to say this or not, in one of our talks years ago. And it was, here's what I want today. I just want to feel okay, Reznor said, quoting his friend. I just want to feel like I'm okay. And as someone who is currently struggling with my mental health issues, that really, really hit me quite a lot. And I'm really grateful for the work that they do. I'm a fanboy. We know this, but like... Mm-hmm. Like stuff like the Social Network score is undeniable, right?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen the film, which
you,
is
what, have you not seen the film?
I have not seen the film.
This is possible.
I don't know how I miss. I'm so bad for missing like seminal films or whatever. There was like a period between I would say maybe 2013 and 2017 that I just didn't see any massive film, whatever. There was like I think a few years in a row where I hadn't seen a single film that was nominated for Best Picture, and I think the
You're
Social
so
Network
art house, Hugh.
I know I could only watch.
He's very into Korean film.
Man. Come on, yeah. Let me tell you, listen,
and exclusively Korean.
I actually love Korean cinema.
Oh no, naturally, yeah, yeah.
What was that one that came out there recently that's meant to be amazing?
Past Lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Absolutely gorgeous.
It was last year, yeah.
Have you seen that?
I have actually have seen that one, and I did cry a little bit. I'm not, I'm
just a little bit, yeah,
just a touch.
Big
just,
tough guy.
Social Network, definitely worth watching. By the way, yeah. Your goal is to watch. I know you're literally off a plane and jet lagged. I'd say like crazy, but your goal before this episode drops on Friday for the main feed is to watch that.
I think it would actually really work with jet lag. Actually, genuinely,
that's a great point. Yeah, I think
it would really work because it's just the haze of it all.
I'll send you the review. I'll
please let
you
do. Know. But speaking of big tough guys, real quick update on J. Cole because we talked
toughest guy of all.
Perhaps we talked recently with Richard Chambers on the show about the whole Kendrick Lamar, Drake, J. Cole situation. I don't want to spend too long on this, but like, let's just say that last week, last Friday, on the same day as this podcast dropping, I believe J. Cole put out a track, right? Mm-hmm. And it was called 7 Minute Drill.
7 Minute Drill, yeah.
A 3 minute long track, by the way.
Yeah.
It was on his
media files.
His surprise mixtape called Might Delete Later, and I guess he probably wishes that he did. And he, you know, hit back at Kendrick Lamar, accused him of, quote, falling off like The Simpsons. He said people only pretended to like To Pimp a Butterfly,
one of the most
seminal albums of a generation. And then said that Kendrick was only coming after him now because he's J. Cole is, quote, front of the line with a comfortable lead. And that was Friday, and that was like, oh wow, okay, this thing is really on. These guys are really going at each other. And then I guess something happened because 2 days later, while headlining his own festival in North Carolina,
so much worse.
On WrestleMania Sunday, no less, J. Cole addressed the crowd. Here's what he had to say.
And I was conflicted because, one, I know my heart, you know what I mean? And like, I know how I feel about my peers, these two niggas that I just been blessed to even stand beside in this game, let alone chase their greatness, right? So I felt conflicted because I'm like, bro, I know I don't really feel no way, but the world want to see blood. I don't know if y'all can feel that, but the world want to see blood. So I say all of that to say, in my spirit of trying to like get this music out, I ain't gonna lie to y'all, I moved in a way that I feel spiritually bad on me. Like I try to like jab my nigga back and I try to keep it friendly. But at the end of the day, when I listen to it and when it comes out and I see the talk, that shit don't sit right with my spirit. That shit make me feel, that shit disrupts my fucking peace. So what I want to say right here tonight is, in the midst of me doing that and in that shit, trying to find a little angle and downplay this nigga's fucking catalog and his greatness, I want to say right now tonight, how many people think Kendrick Lamar is one of the greatest motherfuckers to ever touch a fucking microphone? Dreamville, y'all love Kendrick Lamar, correct? As do I. So I just want to come up here and be like, publicly be like, bruh, that was the lamest, like, goofiest shit. And it made me feel like 10 years ago when I was moving incorrectly. And I pray that God aligned me back up on my purpose and on my path. You know what I mean? I pray that my nigga really didn't feel no way. And if he did, my nigga, I got my chin out. Take your best shot. I'm gonna take that shit on the chin, boy. Do what you do. You know what I mean? Like, all good. Like, it's love.
Now, I don't know about you guys, but my favorite section in the narrative of a high profile rap beef is always the 48 hour later public climb down humiliation apology. What happened to this man? I got in touch with Rudy Kinsler, because remember Rudy called me out recently for some incorrect...
Or a double negative.
A double negative, yeah. Double negative Dave, they call me. and of course, Rudy is a big J. Cole fan.
I didn't know.
And a big Drake fan.
Oh my God.
To the point that he thinks that they're better rappers than Kendrick Lamar.
That's incorrect.
Rudy,
I've had a lovely time with you.
I know you're listening to this, but you're fucking wrong, man. You're so wrong.
Well, when he comes back, we can have this conversation. But for now, I will say, I took the opportunity when this news hit the world, and I sent Rudy a screenshot of the article on Variety about J. Cole's climb down, and I said, defend your boy. And Rudy responded and said, I can't at all, I'm ashamed. And then he said, I'm just glad I wasn't on the podcast last week, because I would have gone to bat for him so hard, only for him to do this 48 hours later, I would have been ruined financially. Only Drake can save me now. So Save us, Drake. Yeah, thoughts real quick on this historic climb down.
Oh, it's so embarrassing, like, do you know what I mean? And the best thing about that is as well is that and even it's in like the rat. So I was listening to it on the way here, whatever. And he was saying that J. Cole was saying that he's in his prime now. And even there, he's saying like, oh, you know, I'm making these regrets. You know, this is stuff that I would have done like 10 years ago, which I feel like, you know, I shouldn't be doing now. 10 years ago is whenever 2014 Forest Hill Drive came out, which is still by far his most successful project. If you look at all of his like stats across streaming, across everything, that is what people still hold him like most like in regard about, is what he was doing 10 years ago. And to then come out with the most outlandish statement of saying people were only pretending to like To Pimp a Butterfly, and to say, I think as well, he said that the following album was then much better, which is also a wrong take, I think. As much as I love Kendrick Lamar,
I definitely enjoy listening to Damn more because it's kind of more immediate and to the point. Yeah, and, you know, yeah. Like, To Pimp a Butterfly is amazing, but I'm not going to lie to you, I don't throw it on every fucking week. It's very dense.
No, it's a, no. That's a, like a fucking...
an essay,
it's like
thesis.
Going to an exhibition. Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's yeah, like, yeah. It's an experiential mm-hmm. piece of music, you know?
Yeah. But as that cohesive, though, it is unbelievable. Like, it's undeniable in what it has. Like, so I...
Won him a Pulitzer Prize.
You know what I mean?
Literally.
Like,
see, this the thing for me is, I thought, I was like, okay, he's speaking well. And I said this to you when you sent it, because you made me wear this, Dave. So when you sent it to me, I was like, he actually speaks quite well. Like, in the piece, he does speak quite well. And I was like, all right, I kind of get it. But now hearing it back and like having been able to sit on that info for a couple of days, it's like, oh, you saw what people said about it. And now you're feeling... A bit
probably
weird, you know?
At the same time though, I like, you know, it's a public, it's a, it,
there's
it's,
two there's two
I don't like I don't like I think it. His credibility is shot to hell now.
100%.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
And I kind of feel like I don't want to pile on the man. You know, it's, but it was just like, what did you do? Like, why did you get into this if you couldn't? Like, oh no. Like, I now I find myself being like, oh, I hope Kendrick doesn't say anything. There's no need, it's over.
It would actually be like,
oh, I feel like I feel like he's got an open goal and he's Lionel Messi with the ball, like, yeah, you know what I mean? I feel like there's no way he can't.
Nah, but sky at the same penalty, time, like Harry Kane.
At the same time, it would take some, like, I don't know, I feel like it would be very tasteless to give a haymaker to someone who's basically like put their gloves down, you know?
And been like, I don't want to say, literally being like, I can't, yeah, you know, yeah, disparage
the ref
his name
has
anymore.
Called it off.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
In this case, the ref is J. Cole, who should never step into the octagon of music ever again. No. Let's go to the Russian Republic of Chechnya next, a regular location on
it's,
the Noam.
It's one of the music hotspots of the world, Dave. It's
all
there with Ibiza.
I mean, they're certainly trying to stop it being that this week because, according to CNN, a report I read this week, Chechnya has announced a ban on music that they consider too fast or too slow. So,
the too
congratulations.
Slow thing.
I saw one tweet that was like, Chechnya's one dance hall DJ is very happy right now. Minister of Culture Musa Dadiev announced the announced the decision to limit all musical, vocal, and choreographic compositions
what?
To a tempo ranging from 80 to 116 beats per minute at a meeting last Friday. Adam, what do you think?
No house music, no dubstep, no drum and bass. That's it, that, literally what that guy is after saying. Anything above 120, like
pop and techno. Good
so,
night.
Maybe he. I don't know. This is fucking wild for a start.
Like, it's not a very nice place. Like, they, you know, there's been lots of anti-LGBTQ plus violence in recent years. Chechnya has been a vocal supporter of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. You know, there's a lot of moral questions here, but this does feel like some kind of very weird
Footloose-esque, like
1984-esque, like kind of thing. Like there
it's like Prohibition in America, but with music. What the fuck? How are you going to stop this? You can't.
Well, it was announced after a meeting between the Republic's ministry and local and regional artists. And artists have been given up until the 1st of June to rewrite their music that
what?
Does not comply with the criteria.
I get lost. Like, there's no way that that's going to work. Maybe it's like a push to try and foster more, like, cult, like as in...
Traditional,
like, music from that region. But, like, it's to... try and outright ban stuff, it's not going to work. They're going to go back on it. And imagine telling a songwriter, oh yeah, see that song that's like really, really fast, 80 BPM now, please. But also, there's also room for them to say, see, this is the thing, right? This is the other thing. You can double or half times of songs and just change the measures and they're the exact same. So any 160 BPM drum and bass songs.
Yeah.
They're 80 BPM now at double the measure.
Yeah.
So, like, realistically, it's got tons of holes in it.
I have the solution, though.
Which is?
If I was a DJ in Chechnya, I would play the clip of the Smash Mouth song going at all different tempos.
Oh, incredible.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And granted, it would probably result in me being thrown in the gulag for the rest of my life and mysteriously, quote-unquote, dying of natural causes. But what a way to go, right? What
the
a
way best to go. Way.
Yeah, yeah.
And lastly, just while we're on, or lastly, rather, next story, I should say, not the last story. Another rare trip in the news section. St. Vincent, an artist who I'm not mad about. I think she's all right, but I think most of the recent work has been quite bad. But she was talking on BBC Radio 2 to Joe Wiley. This is Annie Clark, of course, aka St. Vincent. And she had a point to make about a certain trend in music. So let's hear what she had to say, because she made a very valid point, I feel.
You know how Leonard Cohen's Hallelujah is one of the best songs ever written? Just yep. Period. It's an absolute masterpiece. Hallelujah. It took him however many years to write. The song itself is like about the complication that it is to be alive and the agony and the ecstasy and everything and all of the inherent conflict therein. And then you know how for a period of time it became a song that people would like cover on American Idol? People would sing it on American Idol and just be like, hallelujah, hallelujah. And it's just the worst thing in the world. Like, it's the worst thing in the world. That is the worst thing in the world.
Absolutely.
There are worse things in the world, but in terms of the world of music, she's not far off. I mean, this is up there with my mournful covers screed. And I will say, like, Hugh, when you were suggesting some top five ideas, I think you suggested worse covers before somewhere in recent memory. It's kind of one of those things, we will revisit it, but like, I think she's spot on here. It's not the hottest take of all time, but it bears repeating. I don't know. What do you reckon?
I feel like it's a take that's maybe like 10 years too late.
Yeah.
I think it's like, because I mean...
The horse is bolted.
Yeah, 100%. Like I can't, as much as it was such a trend back in the day or whatever, where there was like, I mean, like the Rufus Wainwright cover was in Shrek, which came out 22 years ago, 23 years ago.
2001, I think.
Yeah, 23 years ago. And then it was that thing, American Idol, which is what, most popular between what, 2006 and 2010?
This song alone was definitely on the X Factor.
Alexander Burke 100%. Did it for, that was her Christmas
song. Her winning song or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
So.
And she can sing, but like, again, it's just like there's no, you know.
There's some songs that just don't need it.
Yeah.
I think
it speaks to a point of...
To be covered at all or to be covered in this kind of, you know, over-the-top style?
I think there's truth to both. I think there's some that just kind of are...
You can't outlaw.
I'm not outlawing it.
I'm not allowed to say it's not allowed,
but like it's sometimes it's okay to leave the source material alone.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's great to just have that piece of art that we have in that form, and it's beautiful and it's a wonderful thing. And I get that, like, there's a cynicism to the... like X Factor, Pop Idol, whatever, American Idol covers. But I think on the flip side of that, then there's also people who cover it in their own musical acts who are just all they want to do is just pay homage to someone that they love in terms of their music. So there's like merit to it in that regard. But I think that whole commercialization of it and that, like, I suppose polishing. To be able to see a reflection in it.
You gotta be innovative, you know, like I've said it before, but you know, there was that time when I was out on a night out and there was like some very annoying guy with a guitar who came in and just ruined everyone's fucking night, as can happen for a lot. And I remember he was doing like a slow Ed Sheeran song, forget which one it was, but like during the bridge of the Ed Sheeran song that he was playing, the song by Ed Sheeran, he literally like stopped for a dramatic pause and then he like started like tapping his foot and then he went, I've got soul, but
no.
I'm not a soul. And I was like, and all of us were just like, you can't do that. That isn't outsider
art. Water and oil don't mix.
Yeah, that isn't outsider art. That is fucking crazy. Hugh, you're a man with a guitar on occasion. What do you like?
I am a devil for the man with the guitar.
You've done some covers, surely?
I am a devil for chip shops
in Liverpool.
I do. Oh my God. Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a very appropriate. Well, actually, that was a song from Manchester. So I really
Yeah.
Well, it was a chip shop in Liverpool, but it was an Oasis song. So I was really toeing the line of what was acceptable. I think it's context. Like it's the recontextualization of songs. Like, for example, there's a trend in like Irish country music where they will take like old folk songs and, you know, throw like a 4/4 beat and a like a hoppy accordion behind, like a devastating, like, you know, like something like Raglan Road or something like that, or and it just completely kind of strips whatever that original meaning of the song was. Or even like, I don't know, when you see like sped up versions of songs from TikTok or whatever, where it's like, is this really what the original artist was meaning, whatever, like they were putting this together.
Chasing Abby's Oh My Johnny.
I no fucking comment. That with a passion. It is absolutely, you know what the worst thing is that if you listen back to like other, like old, like, you know, like Dubliners recordings, whatever, or like folk recordings from like the 60s and the 50s, whatever, they're amazing. They're unbelievable. Like what they were doing musically and stuff is so interesting and stuff. And then you listen to that and you're like, oh my God, like what are you doing? Like, well, like where are you? But you can take
covers. Dangerous Hugh, they're ripping up the rule book.
That's fine, but it doesn't make it
good.
Like, good. Yeah, I don't think, like, you know, there is a place for...
I have more fucking respect for Kalashta Lurgan doing, you know...
Oh,
they
you're preaching to the choir here.
Kalashta Lurgan did a cover of...
Famous Shocks on Glushton, Hugh.
They did a cover...
Show favourites.
They did a cover of Thunderstruck recently, which was unbelievable. It was ridiculous. But it was all, like, trad-inspired and stuff like that or whatever. It was unbelievable. It was crazy. But then at the same time, they did a cover of Wake Me Up years ago that haunts me to this very day because it was all that was being played in the Gael College back in the day.
Song of the Camino.
The Song of the Camino.
Ask Gael.
Song of the Camino. I know, Ask Gael.
Song of the Gael Talks.
Ligme Sear was what it was called instead of Wake Me Up. Yeah, I understand her point generally, but I think Hallelujah is a weird... hill to die on, I think.
That's fair. Speaking of dying, Craig Fitzpatrick is very much alive and in Japan, but his hero, of course, is Jim Morrison of The Doors. We know this. Craig has been very vocal over the years about how much he loves The Doors.
He loves The Doors.
His favourite band. I think he's getting a tattoo.
That's all he ever talks about to me, is The Doors.
It gets a bit old, I will say. Mm. And there's a band that Craig also kind of likes. They're called The Libertines. The Libertines put out an album last week, and they have revealed that they bought the bathtub that Jim Morrison died in for their Margate Hotel, which is called the Albion Rooms. Not weird at all, of course. Very rock and roll, isn't it?
No, I don't know. I don't know about that.
That's we're into morbid memorabilia again, which is like...
They themselves know this. Like, I mean, like they said, like, you know, they were obviously doing lots of interviews for the thing, and they said, there's a fellow who my wife's cousin knows, and his cousin was basically the landlord. This is of the place in Paris where Jim Morrison passed away at the age of 27, 1971. Pete Doherty says, this guy isn't interested in music, even less interested in music mythology, and so he's just been going on about this bathtub, which people have been trying to buy off him. He doesn't want it. He thinks it's morbid to make money off. So I said, well, we'll take it for the hotel. And so I said to Carl, that being Carl Barrett, and obviously Carl's known me for years.
His bandmate?
It's well established, guys. Knows I have a tendency to exaggerate and, well, lie. But this one is the bang honest truth, and it's actually there. So there you go. I've come around on the Libertines in a sense that, like, a band I never really had time for. I'm kind of glad Pete Doherty's alive, you know?
Yeah.
And it doesn't look like he's about to die.
No, you know? And to be fair, they seem to have kind of owned their brand of late. Like, they're really leaning into the parody element of what the Libertines are, from what I've seen their social media presence anyway. At least they're taking a lighthearted approach to this record. That doesn't mean I'm going to listen to it.
No, me neither. I will say I did a bunch of research though, because we recorded a podcast, you know, the Indo Daily podcast at the Irish Independent, by the way, if anyone wants to know where I work, that's where I work. We recorded a podcast recently about Pete Doherty. Haven't put it out yet. There may have been a familiar guest. There may be a gentleman who was just mentioned who might be the guest on that episode and might be coming to your ears pretty soon. But I had to do a bunch of research, obviously, and on my travels, a lot of audio clip gathering, and I rewatched the full interview between Pete Doherty and Pat Kenny from 2009 on The Late Late Show, and let me tell you, that's wild, guys. The first minute, there's like a fan in the crowd who's like, I love you, Pete! Like, it's just going on, and it's just like... Pat Kenny will not stop being like, and drugs.
And you enjoy drugs. You
like, and tell me about this
you like to drink as well. And then like, Peter Hardy literally is like, why does it have to be? He's like, and once he's Peter Hardy, he literally goes, this is a cheery conversation, isn't it? And it's just like, it's so bad. Like, it's so bad. Like, and he goes, like, the infamous moment when Peter Hardy, of course, goes, I bet you couldn't, you know, name any of my songs. And Pat Kenny goes, probably not.
Pat Kenny, right, okay.
Like, his face.
Sorry, Pat Kenny fucking hates music, right? Yeah. This guy has is it News Talk?
He's on News Talk.
Yeah, he has a show where he plays music, and there has been, like, I go back to this every single time. There's a clip And I don't know where I'm going to find it, but if I find it, I will put it in this very moment of where he is playing a Mango and Math Man song, which is obviously, like, I don't know, part of the radio playlist. Mm-hmm. And he literally says, I've never heard of these people. It's Mango and Mathman.
Mathman?
Yeah.
No, I'm pretty sure. I think it's when Stuart Clark, my former Hot Press deputy editor, I think it's when Stuart, but I think when Stuart goes on to his show sometimes, I think he like recommends songs.
Yeah.
And he may have brought that one in. And it was just like, oh, I've never heard of these people before. Mango and Mathman.
It's so funny.
And then there was also the Scratch. Funny. Yeah. The Scratch also got a similar ask, you know, like.
The Scratch got nothing. That's even worse. The Scratch got nothing. You had Stuart Clark waxing lyrical about the Scratch and how, like, to be fair, they're a fucking great band.
Unbelievable band.
Loved them. Last record, I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. And he's like given a big long, like, you know, minute and a half spiel about how good the Scratch are, and then afterwards there's dead air for, I'm not joking you, 6 seconds. And then Pat Kenny goes, right, and it just like complete 90 degree right turn.
It's phenomenal.
It's incredible.
I respect the hell out of it, because like it's like I'm not. Do you know what? He's like that guy from the ad who's like, I'm not going to be the person I'm expected to be anymore. He won't kowtow to your fucking, you know, like
music enjoying ears.
You know, Cody Rhodes says, do the work. Pat Kenny says, no thanks. And lastly, in the news section now, we need to stop being weird. We need to stop being weird about One Direction, guys. Louis Tomlinson of One Direction, of course, maybe the best member of One Direction.
Ooh, hot take.
I don't know.
Very hot take. Not the greatest motor.
No, he's definitely not. But he has opened up about his frustrations with years-long romance conspiracies surrounding his One Direction bandmate, Harry Styles. He's previously shut down rumours that fans have started regarding Louis Tomlinson and Harry Styles being more than just close friends. Because, you know, that's how internet culture works.
Yeah,
we ship these people.
Tumblr-fiction.
Tumblrification. Larry, I believe, is what it's called, and not just, that's the ship name.
Oh, that's their, you know, yeah, like Bennifer. Bennifer, yeah. Louis Tomlinson said, he was speaking to a Brazilian magazine, and he said, what I realized, come to Brazil to be interviewed. He said, what I realized.
To be interviewed in brackets, I love that, yeah.
For a 500 word print special. What I realized a few years ago is that there's nothing I can say. There's nothing I can do to stop those who believe in this conspiracy. They are so connected to what they believe, and they will not see the truth for what it really is. I'm sure many people look and find all these conspiracies that happen in life interesting. I'd be lying if I said it didn't irritate me a little, but it's the nature of the job. There are times when it gets very personal. I have my son. He is the most important person in my life, and occasionally these theories end up addressing things that are a bit unfair. This is what we have now. There's nothing I can do about it. Nothing I can say to stop people from inventing what they want to invent. So be it. Hugh Carr, are we past the apex point here for just treating people fairly and not speculating on their personal lives? If you happen to be, if you attain this level of stratospheric, you know, as you say, Tumblrification friendly fandom with fans of a younger age, etc., like, are you just doomed forever to be like, what should they do? Should they just fucking kiss so everyone can just leave them alone?
I think that would only fuel the fans even more. Do you know, that is that kind of that curse of, you know, don't feed the trolls is like the classic internet adage, where whenever there's something going on that it's better just to not address it, because they're like, people who are doing this, like, isn't like people who are believing these conspiracy theories are not doing it in any way based in fact. It's based on hypotheticals and on, you know,
hopes and dreams.
100%. Like being like, I would love if this was a thing that was true. Like, I see that, I can see this. I see how this would be true. Like, there are, the thing with conspiracy theories are, some with ones that end up growing legs, is that there is like a degree, and it could be like the nth degree, it could be the smallest degree of truth and whatever. The truth here being that Harry and Liam are quite close, that they are friends. They're
Louis,
very, very,
Louis,
sorry.
Not Liam.
There's too
Liam
many of
the
them.
Greatest motor out of this. He's off doing other things.
There's far too many of them. That Harry and Louis are quite close, and he says it himself that he's very proud of his friend, and that, you know, and that, you know, in the same way that, like, people are affectionate with their mates, like, you know, I would hug everyone that I would say that I'm close with, and I would, but then if people took that picture out of context, and if my every single movement and detail and what I was doing was being like analyzed and looked up to the answer, yeah, do you know, like, it's very much, and it's very hard to convince someone that they're, that what they believe isn't true than it is to believe for them to show them, because you can show as much evidence as you can. He literally has a child with someone else, and is, I'm not sure what his current relationship status is, but like, there is so much more evidence to prove that this isn't true,
but it's going to be impossible to prove these things wrong. And I think now it's TikTok now, I think, is where most of these fan theories lie.
Yeah, and I think we're going to be seeing a lot of things on TikTok lately about the film Joker 2, mm-hmm. Folly You Do, or as we call it around here,
Folly a Junk.
Junker. Folly a Junk. The reason I mentioned real quick is the trailer came out for it today. It looks very annoying.
I like to see that in the Junko Tech. Yeah.
See, that works. I like that one. That's good.
Also a name for a circus, by the way.
Yeah. Come on down to the Junk. Adam's Junk Attack.
Adam's Junk Attack, yeah.
Adam's Junk Attack was raided last night. 15 armed guardie. The reason I mentioned this real quick before we end the news section is I saw a tweet, because there was that infamous one years ago, I think it was Scott Aukerman, who was like, you know, he was like, he's like, something about that Joker character really unsettles me. And he's like, imagine, like, you know, someone finding the idea of crime funny. Like, it's very good stuff. I saw someone say, put up a tweet, and they said, the Joker may be all fun and games up on the silver screen, but if you ran into that guy in a dark alley, well, it would be no laughing matter. Oh, that's wonderful. Also wonderful. Okay, look, we're transitioning now to the old top five, but we're going to hear about Hugh's trip. And of course, if you like what we do in the show, if you love what we do in the show, please tell a friend. But also patreon.com/nuancore is there. Episode previews. Get this episode and other episodes 24 hours early. And you can also enjoy our new album club. And there will be more exclusive Patreon content coming as well. But Hugh, you know, I gotta wonder, you know, you said on Instagram that this might have been the best week of your entire life. Mm-hmm. Is that true? And how much did this cost you?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I would imagine, like, you know, until if I have a child, that might beat it out, but I don't know yet for sure. It was unbelievable. It was amazing. How much did it cost?
You don't have to give us the exact figure, but I mean, are you going to be basically like, you know,
rice and beans for the next?
Will work for food for the next. Yeah.
Maybe I'll set up a Patreon. I might need to get on that plug.
Don't steal our don't steal our traffic, Hugh, please. We need
and that is patreon.com
/noencore. Exactly. So you went to Philadelphia for a full week, I think it was. How many wrestling shows did you see, including WrestleMania?
Including WrestleMania, the total was 11 shows in 6 days.
That's incredible.
So,
by the way, I also want to tell everyone, you'll see it on the Instagram post. It's No Encore Show on Instagram. Hugh Carr has arrived at the studio today in maybe the greatest t-shirt I've ever seen in my entire
life. It's fucking phenomenal.
If you remember the PlayStation 1 SmackDown games, Hugh has that basically, and it's a front and back decal. It's exceptional, and it wasn't cheap, was it?
No. Well, it was $50. It was $50, which is still cheaper than a lot of the things in that shop. And they're actually is a music connection here, which I am so glad now I can talk about it on No Encore. So, I don't know if you remember this, but 2 years ago, maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, West Side Gunn was meant to play in Dublin, and he was meant to play in the Sugar Club, and he got arrested on a gun possession charge and sent Benny the Butcher instead. And
rather nominative determinism striking again there.
Yeah, I think so.
For poor West Side Gunn.
Who would have known? Who could have seen it coming? And I had a ticket for that show because I quite enjoy the works of Mr. Gunn and Griselda.
Also, just before we move on from the gun charge, anyone who's familiar with West Side Gunn knows he literally makes gun noises in his ad-libs in every
boom,
single...
Boom, boom, boom.
There you go.
Also,
yeah.
If he was a wrestler, the Gun Charge would be an excellent name. Oh, for his finisher move.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's a brainbuster into a crossface. I don't know.
Oh, fantastic. Beautiful. So I was in the shop where I bought this t-shirt, which is Suplex Vintage in Philadelphia on South Street. They were, everyone was just having the crack. Everyone was talking about wrestling and WrestleMania, and obviously everyone was very excited. And there was some lad there, this man called Tom, who was talking about, I don't know if you're aware of Wale Mania.
So Wale is a rapper who goes to WrestleMania, but he also does his own kind of wrestling indie concert show or something.
Yes. Yeah. And he was saying that apparently that had only sold like, you know, 200 tickets, whatever. And he's like, but we've got this West Side Gunn thing on that has sold like 900 tickets already. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't know there was a West Side Gunn thing going on. Like, I'd love to go, whatever. And he was like, take my number. I'll put you on the guest list. And I was like, what? And he was like, I'll put you on the guest list for this like West Side Gunn thing. And it was this thing called Heels Have Eyes, which was run by his like pop-up like wrestling merch shop or whatever, which was on the Friday night. And when I say, we went to it after we went to see Ring of Honor, which is another wrestling show that was on, one of the 11. When I say it was potentially one of the worst concert experiences I've ever had in my entire life. It was so, so funny.
Take
it
me
was,
inside this arena, please.
So it was called, it was the Theatre of Living Arts is the name of the place. And
boy, were those arts alive.
Oh, my Lord, did I feel alive in that. I felt higher than I have in any other space in my entire life. We got in there and the place is packed, but no one is moving. But there is music playing. But no one is like, even like a sway or a, any sort of dance, whatever. And I can't remember which DJ, they had like Alchemist and they had like loads of people who were on the Griselda label, whatever, were there and performing their, like playing their tracks, whatever. We go upstairs. And when I say that I have never seen fatter joints in my entire life being smoked in that upstairs area, it honestly looked like people were smoking sticks of rock. Like it was ridiculous. Like it was the smell and the I'm sure there was a contact high going on when we were in there. The music was, it was grand, it was rap, it was, you know, the kind of style that Griselda have, whatever.
How bad, Kenny, that was that? It was grand.
It was grand, it was a bit of rap, you know, it was a bit of rap.
Music of the time.
The people who enjoy the East Coast style of rap music.
It's urban, I believe.
I believe contemporary. Yeah. But no one was moving, and there was no reactions to anything. And then they would do this thing where, there's a thing in wrestling called the Royal Rumble, which I think is probably second to WrestleMania's the biggest event, where people will come in as surprises, whatever, and it'll be like, well, like there'll be a countdown from 10 and someone will appear. And there is a wrestler called Prince Nana who is currently signed to AEW, which is the number 2 promotion. And his whole thing is that he does a dance. This is the whole thing he does, is that he does a dance to a song. And they started playing the song and Prince Nana started doing the dance in this crowd, or for this crowd. When I say, you could have heard a pin drop. It was so painful. It was so, so awkward. And I was like, this can't get any worse. Lo and behold, Sabu appears. Sabu, Extreme Championship Wrestling legend, who is a 50-year-old man or whatever.
Yeah, he's more than that.
He must be. He just kept hitting a signature pose and then he left. And literally just kept pointing up to the sky. Like as in like went to walk off stage. Like it was so, so strange. We only stayed for like half an hour. It was...
At least you got on the guest list. That's pretty good.
It's a fun thing. But
didn't have to pay for it.
West Side Gun also kept insisting on getting the women to flash the wrestlers that were there or whatever. And kept asking for strip club recommendations. And then didn't rap. It was only just whatever, like his vocal tracks were being played on the DJ decks, whatever. So he didn't actually rap himself at all.
Man has his priorities straight.
It was insane.
It sounds awful.
It was terrible. I would say probably if I have to rank my gigs of the year so far, that is easily
rock
like,
bottom.
Rock bottom.
Very, very good.
Very, very good. But yeah, it was So that was a surreal part.
You went to 11 shows. You're pretty much gone all the time. You see any wrestlers in the wild in the streets or anything?
I saw Gunther and Ludwig Kaiser. Gunther, who was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time until he got beat by my boy, my Sami Zayn, my sweet sweet ska loving Sami Zayn. And we saw him. Saw Big E coming out of 7-Eleven, who is currently injured and probably will be forever. I don't think he'll ever be allowed back in a wrestling ring, but he's still a very, very popular figure. And then it was just crazy, like how much stuff. We got stuck in a snowstorm at one point. We actually managed to catch the apocalypse when we were over there because...
There was an earthquake, wasn't there?
So there was the first earthquake in 11 years in Philadelphia. And we didn't know what was happening except for the headboard of our beds were shaking. We thought it was like the train was especially heavy that day or something. We went up to Boston to go see an AEW show. And then we were staying in this place called Worcester, which is potentially the worst town I've ever been in. And a snowstorm came that night and we had to trudge through the snow at 3 a.m. to get the train, to get the plane back, to get the train to get back to Boston for 6 a.m., to get the flight at 8 a.m., to land in Philadelphia at 10 a.m., to go to the first show of the day at 11 a.m. The first of 3 or 4 that day. I can't really remember. And
how are you so chirpy?
I don't know. I actually wish I could tell. I think there was just constantly...
This man was running on pure adrenaline.
In my soul, something Cody Rhodes.
So between the independent shows and between going to WrestleMania itself, tell me about the fans. I mean, we love wrestling. However, we are also aware that, let's be honest, it attracts a bunch of freaks.
Yes.
And you're going to the hardcore shows
yeah.
in kind of gymnasiums, mm-hmm. and then you're going to a fucking stadium
yeah.
with 70,000 people.
Yeah.
WrestleMania. You had a quite a far away view on night one.
Yeah, I was like in a wind tunnel.
And a better one on night two, but also with a massive light shining in your face.
Yeah.
Just take me inside and give me a sense of, again, of the people. I'm guessing like lots of people dressed up, lots of people carrying around like $600 replica belts.
Signs, the whole lot.
So I found out that, I'm happy enough to say how much it was, whatever. So where we were sat for the second night, our tickets were like €500 each. They're about that. And we were close enough, like we were still like in the stands, but we weren't like on the floor or whatever. I've seen people were paying like $20,000 for the seats that were on the floor, $23,000, like $27,000 or whatever. And
there were some celebrities like kind of dotted around in the front row, like T-Pain was there.
Vanessa Hudgens was there
two nights around. She was having a great fucking time. She was behind the commentary desk, so you could see her all the time. Mm-hmm. Heavily pregnant Vanessa Hudgens as well, yeah, in her old school rock t-shirt.
Yeah.
I have to wonder, they're comped, surely.
Oh, 100%.
Surely.
100%.
But they can afford it.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. But they're 100% there for the sake of being that little caption at the front that says like, oh, look. My favorite was that Brock Purdy was there, who plays for the San Francisco 49ers or whatever, and was just relentless. Booed because it was in the Philadelphia Eagles stadium, so obviously there's a strong rivalry between two very high ranking teams.
Yeah. So you're sitting there, you got good seats, and you're surrounded by people who are like, you know, of all kinds.
I can't begin to describe how many different countries and how many different like groups of people and how many different like even states and stuff. I think it was something like figured out that it was like something like 60 odd countries were present at WrestleMania, or how many people had traveled. And for the most part, everyone was really nice, which was because I think like, especially at the smaller shows, because everyone is there for the same reason. Mm-hmm. And it's all the hardcores, and you know, there's kind of like almost a surprise whenever there's someone else from your area there or whatever. Found so many. My mate called me a paddy magnet at one point because we just kept finding Irish people. And it was kind of really nice to just like chat and have the crack. And, you know, especially in that shop, like obviously that's how we ended up getting the guest list for that thing, was because this fella who was a fan of wrestling just happened to be in the shop and was like, here, listen, mon out to our terrible, terrible gig. But no, and it was actually grand. And there is this stereotype about wrestling fans, which is that they don't wear deodorant. And I'll just say that the one of the rooms was very warm. That's all I'll say. But it actually wasn't too bad. I thought it'd be far, far worse. I think wherever we were was quite well ventilated.
Night one or night two WrestleMania, which did you enjoy more? What was your highlight of the weekend?
I will say night two, probably because I could feel my hands.
Freezing on night one.
So I was like being in a wind tunnel because we were up at the top, like we were way up.
You sent me a photograph.
You can see the top of like the fucking screen.
I stood up and watched it live both nights. I had a great time. Night two I thought was better, but like, he sent me a photograph on night one, and it's like, it looked like you were at a GAA match in like December,
yeah,
down the road or something. Like, you got the bobble hat on, your hoodie is pulled up over your mouth.
In row QQ, yeah, of the Cusick stand.
And Michael Cole kept being like, it's very cold tonight, by the way. Yeah. Just like, oh,
it
no.
was. It actually was. And it was weird because it technically wasn't that much warmer the next night, but it felt way warmer. I think it was a wind thing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, night two, 100%. Like, it was just.
Does this, like when they come out, like does the music sound huge in the stadium, or does it not sound like, is there how does the sound travel?
It doesn't.
We're getting into the music part now, guys. You can tune back in.
It wasn't like earth shaking. Like, I didn't feel like, it wasn't like being at a, you know, when you're at a gig or whatever and you're like standing in front of the amps or whatever and it's literally like shaking,
or an arena show naturally, yeah, more hemmed in,
yeah,
guess,
because it was an open roof or whatever. It was, so they obviously had to, they pumped up the volume to God knows how much or whatever, so it was definitely like loud. Like, it wasn't like quite like, I wouldn't say that there wasn't anyone who heard music playing and didn't really know exactly what was going on, but it was strange. It was like if someone, you know, whenever they play a song at the end of a football match or whatever, but imagine that like 50 times over one night or whatever, and they'd only play like a 30 seconds of a really bad loop of a song,
yeah,
because your man who currently composes music for WWE is terrible. it was interesting to, and obviously there was like fireworks and stuff as well, and like they would have like concussive impacts and stuff like that, like going off whatever, and there would be like, you know, like the fireworks display was ridiculous, like both nights.
Yeah,
it's a huge spectacle. I can't even begin to imagine how much it cost and how much they made over the weekend. It's
It made a shit ton of money. Like, they're on fire right now. I guess lastly, before we get to your top five, one great thing about Hugh being there while I was watching it live was that there's a couple moments on the second night, I think it was, when like it was very clear that the crowd were distracted by something, mm-hmm. like during a couple matches, like because like they like the reactions did not match what was happening in the ring, mm-hmm. and there was like lots of cheers and like some booing, and I was like, okay, there's a few options here. There could be a fight in the crowd. Mm-hmm. There could be a beach ball, yeah. and you know, or something else. And so, literally, like, I was like, "Oh yeah, I can find out what's going on." All I have to do is text
you. I've got a man on the inside.
We are a man on the street.
And so I texted you, and I was like, "What the fuck is happening in the crowd?" Mm-hmm. And you said,
"The lights. Everyone was were blinded by the lights.
A massive floodlight was just like facing you head on."
Yeah. So basically, and it's been a problem at a lot of shows that they've been, because it was the same thing at Money in the Bank, which was the last big WWE show that I was at. That. Basically, what they do is that they have these lights. I think they light the audience so that if there is some like huge reaction that they can cut to or whatever, that they'll have that. But what ends up happening is that people like in the upper deck, and even like I wasn't even particularly very high up, whatever, but like people then just get blinded by the light and can't actually see what's going on.
Actually, you paid €500 for a ticket to just get in the building.
Yeah, ours wasn't too bad. It wasn't the worst.
Like people were singing like a chant, turn
the lights off. Well, fuck your lights was another one.
They should have had the Trump thing, you know.
Turn their lights off.
Turn them off. Turn them off. Yeah. No.
It was I would be raging.
Turn off the lights. But yeah, okay. Listen, we could talk about wrestling all day, but we're still going to. But we need to inject the musical element to this right now. So. It's top five. So again, to explain, WrestleMania, huge spectacle, and they often bring music to it. Now, much like I find when you're at home and you're watching like highlights of Glastonbury or something, mm-hmm. it's very rare for me that live music will come through the television and actually transcend. I often find that it doesn't quite work. You know, mm-hmm. it works to an extent, but I think that, you know, there's probably no substitute for being there, of course. Mm-hmm. No matter how well the cameras catch it and how much money is spent in the production, et cetera, et cetera. I think it can often just be a bit lost, mm-hmm. especially at a WrestleMania when there's 70,000 people. It's in a football stadium,
yeah.
And so, you know, but they make a go of it, and they want to differentiate this from your regular pay-per-view or premium live event, as they call it now.
Yeah.
And so you've gone back through WrestleMania's past. There have been 40 mm-hmm. of the WrestleManias. We're only mm-hmm. picking five examples here, though, mm-hmm. and. I mean, like, you know, if you watch WWE, guys, you should know that they're rather attracted to nu metal.
Yes.
You know, like, they like to get a rapper in, mm-hmm. you know, like, I mean, like, occasionally a pop star if they can get it, but it's usually kind of confined to a not terribly imaginative stretch. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know if this is going to make it onto your list. I hope it isn't. If it is, you can stop me. But to give an example from this year's WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. Nothing from this year's WrestleMania made it onto the list. Not okay. Either between the very good and the quite bad.
So, like, Lil Wayne was there on night one, and it had been said in advance that he was going to play a new song. He did not. He came out and did like a quick version of A Millie, mm-hmm. and then just walked to the ring with Jey Uso. But like the WWE, like sincerely and straight faced, were like, "Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the greatest rapper of all time, Lil Wayne." And I was like, "Now listen, I appreciate that maybe he's underrated, but the greatest of all time."
They love to exaggerate, though, and like there's like so many examples of them.
WWE's being favorite band. Yeah. I'm sure we'll get to them, perhaps. But Motionless in White did Rhea Ripley's intro.
Yes,
and I actually quite enjoyed that.
That was great. That was unreal. And the cool thing is that, so for anyone who doesn't know, Rhea Ripley is the current women's champion.
She's amazing
and is incredible, but has modeled herself after the lead singer of Motionless in White.
This is like one of those kind of fright metal bands, isn't it? That I've never really paid attention to, mm-hmm.
but they're great. I mean that song is fantastic. Her like theme is ridiculous. But so she had modeled herself to look like the singer. Like that was kind of like her inspiration for her character and stuff. And so then it became this really mad full circle moment where she was then being sang out to the ring by the lead singer, and they looked like siblings. Like I watched the video back.
It looked great.
So people were thinking that she was singing herself out to the ring in a sort of John Cena-esque like kind of way.
Or truth. Yeah.
And she suddenly had these amazing scream vocals.
Let's kick off your list. So you've only picked bad songs.
I have only picked bad songs.
Okay.
Yeah.
So these are bad live music performances at WrestleMania over the years. Let's hear your number five.
My number five is, and just to give context as well for the list, I have, so I've picked the song and then there's, I've added in context for what was happening that year in wrestling and stuff and like what, like kind of the impact of that song. But this number five one is a, I couldn't believe how bad it was. I think I could believe how kind of bad it was, but it was just that, that it was then the same thing over and over again. Was a bit insane to me. Did you know that Pimpin' Ain't Easy? Did you know this?
I've heard that, yeah.
I think you can play number five.
He wanna trip on the mat to get laid. Let him pimp or let him die, that's a game he chose. Condos, hunkers, and beautiful hoes. Cartier wrists, wear furs and gold. And mad cash, baby, too much to fold. Causes pimp or die. Pimp or die, baby. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man. Grab your bitches! Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
You hear that,
pimpin' ain't, pimpin' ain't easy, man. Pimpin' ain't easy, man.
Just one time in my life, just for one night. I want to be the pimpin' godfather.
Now look, that's an example of if Pat Kenny's disdain for the form came in, I'd be like, fair enough, Pat, no problem. Can you possibly explain this? Who on earth was that?
That is a rapper turned police procedural legend, Ice-T. rapping The Godfather and D-Lo, which I feel like it must be importantly noted that they were accompanied by The Ho Train in the opening bout of WrestleMania 2000, which was the 16th edition of WrestleMania. And that was his theme. This is what he walked out to every time, except that this time they were like, no, let's bring out Ice-T to do live. And I think with some stuff like that, like there a lot of things with wrestling teams is that they're loops because you never know how long someone's going to take for their entrance, or it could be a case of like, you know, that they're the person at the end of the show and that they are going to be out there for a while, you know, signing autographs or whatever like that. Like I saw CM Punk on Monday, you know, like signing and taking selfies after Monday Night Raw, and it was just playing his song over and over again, which was,
oh my god,
yeah,
like Cult of Personality,
yeah, which is a banger,
banger. Living Color. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing, but also over and over again, because like what I realized is that I never want to hear Cody Rhodes' theme song ever again.
Oh, I heard that so many
after
times.
Watching two nights of WrestleMania and some of Monday Night Raw there. And like, don't get me wrong, it's perfect for what he does. The whoa thing is phenomenal. I'm sure it sounded amazing. I'm sure it felt amazing to do in the stadium. But like, I never need to hear that song ever again.
So as it, so the main event two ends, Cody Rhodes wins or whatever, and he's, oh sorry for anyone who hasn't watched WrestleMania 40
yet. I think
yet.
They're either listening or they've stopped listening.
They did the thing where they celebrated with him or whatever, and they just kept playing the song over and over and over again, but obviously it was like this huge thing, like his family was there.
It went on for about 15 minutes, probably more in the stadium.
Oh yeah, way more than the stadium. And then when we got out of the stadium, there was a fella, and he was English. That's all you need to know. Was playing the song over and over again off his phone in the tube station. Like, and you know, and the whole thing with the song is that there's a bit like before the chorus, whatever, like in the bridge, whatever, where everyone goes like, "Whoa!" Like that's all they do, whatever. And you could hear less and less people do it every time. Like people were getting more and more.
It's like
sick
a football chant where there's that awkward moment where it just trails off, where everyone's into it for about five goes, and then it's.
Yeah, but this man was very into it by himself.
This song, however, the character of the Godfather, of course, was a literal pimp.
Yeah, literally. And his whole thing would be that
attitude era, everybody. This is where it was very racy. And you know, you look back now and you're like, oh boy.
Yeah, it doesn't really age quite well. His whole thing was that if you wrestled him, you could either wrestle him or you could trade it all in for
One night
with his train, with
17
his posse.
Different women, who were literally local strippers who were hired to be these are the women that were. Oh, it's so the
it's,
industry.
It's so slimy.
This industry is so sleazy. It's like
that
so
was the worst. Like it was the best and worst time for it as
there's
well.
Still plenty of problems in the industry. We should say as well that you know, we don't advocate everything that happens in the world of wrestling. Yeah, I've often said it's sleazier than porn.
Yeah,
And yet just as compelling. But here's the thing. Do you think Ice-T has any recollection that he did this?
So, he tweeted about it there a few years ago.
No
being
way.
Like, being like, some people don't know that I opened WrestleMania. And I was like, I don't know if I would publicize this too much because it's been...
delete this.
Well it has been. It's been edited out of the replay on the WWE Network. So if you subscribe to WWE's, like, basically Netflix subscription, you can get, like, a replay of, like, all of the WrestleManias and stuff that have happened, whatever. And there's now... loads of stuff that have been lost because of licensing fees. There's an amazing version.
Yeah, it's not a moral thing, guys. It's a it's a money issue.
It's a money issue. That's what it is. They're not like, oh my God, this is awful. This
it's not like
is
that Disney thing that flashes up when you want to see, like, you know, the crows from Dumbo.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
Hey, this was made in the 40s, by the way. Yeah. And we were a lot more racist.
Yeah. No, they just cut it out because they're like, we don't want to pay anymore or whatever. But it means that there's some amazing stuff that's cut out because there's a version of... Salt and Peppa's What a Man, as they sang in the American football player
Lawrence Taylor.
Who
Any Given Sunday legend Lawrence Taylor, by the way.
So they sang him into the ring, and it was actually very good, and it was actually a lot of fun.
Now it's gone. And what they do is, like, if they have these performances, they'll just, like, put a generic track under it for, like, someone's entrance theme if it, you know. Mm-hmm. If that expires, and so yeah, like that's an annoying aspect. Mm-hmm. Great start, bringing us back to 2000. I thought that the set this year looked like the WrestleMania 2000 set, except, you know, on steroids.
Just a touch, yeah.
How appropriate. Can we have your number four, please?
Absolutely. Very quickly, though, just for the history of that one particular
event.
Whatever. The main event was Triple H, Rock, Foley, and Big Show in a Fatal 4-Way.
That's right. And McMahon in every corner.
Yes, yeah. And it was the first time that a bad guy ever won the WrestleMania main event.
He retained it, yeah. Triple H retained the title.
First time it ever happened.
Much to my delight as a big Triple H fan.
Yeah, and the other notable thing that happened there was the first three-way ladder match between Edge and Christian, the Dudleys, and the Hardy Boys, which is probably, I would say, one of the coolest things that have ever been set to tape ever. It's unbelievable. It's on YouTube, I'm nearly sure. So
only outdone a year later.
Yeah, I know. Amazing, ridiculous stuff. All right, my number two is...
Number four.
My number four, sorry, I forgot it.
Is jumping ahead.
I can't help myself. I'm just so excited.
You got jet lag, it's fine.
Thank you. My next one is a bit more patriotic, I would say.
So yeah, apparently recorded on, like, the first mobile phone I ever bought back in fucking 99. Before you explain who this is, why is the audio so horrendous?
It is so bad that it's no longer available anywhere. So
this is all we could get, everyone. This is the best we could do.
And trust me, I went looking. I was looking for the guts of about 45 minutes last night trying to find a better version, but... Hugh, please.
This was so widely condemned that it wasn't even on the videotape that...
this is the Degeneration X Band, isn't
it? This is the Degeneration X Band opening up WrestleMania 14 with one of the only few instances that Star Spangled Banner has actually been played at WrestleMania because of this weird obsession or lack of obsession that...
With America the Beautiful. Yeah. So the DX Band were like this kind of very Rage Against the Machine ripoff.
Oh, completely.
You can absolutely hear it.
I think they're called the Chris Warren Band.
So Chris Warren was the singer. Yeah. And he also did...
He's passed away, hasn't he?
He has passed away, yeah.
He did a lot of the themes, though, didn't he? Like, was it previous? So,
the DX theme, of course, is them.
Which but also the, My Time as well.
Which I fucking adore.
It's one of the best.
Triple H's best theme, by the way. You know? Is this on?
Is this thing on? Ooh, woo, woo.
So good. Okay, so yeah, so this was... So if I go on the network right now, this isn't on there.
Let me tell you, you're not going to find it.
It's nowhere.
I remember this. I remember that at the time. Mm-hmm. WrestleMania 14.
Yeah.
So this is 99, is it?
I think so, yeah. No, it's 98.
98, sorry, yes.
But they
They opened up the show with this, and it was literally booed out the door. Like, it was Jim Johnston, who did a lot of the themes for WWE, a lot of the most famous ones, performing with Chris Warren.
That's Jim Johnston is who I'm thinking of. Yeah,
he did nearly all the most famous themes in wrestling history are Jim Johnston, and yet somehow pulled this thing off as well. And it's just so the only way that
this
I
this is also
get
the
it,
height of the Attitude Era, so they're being like, you know, as edgy as possible.
This is literally the start of it.
Okay.
This is the first time that they had that scratch logo that was used all the time. This is when Stone Cold won the World Heavyweight Championship for the first time.
From Shawn Michaels,
who then retired for 4 years. This was the day after the Raw after WrestleMania is whenever the first seeds of who The Rock would become. It's whenever he took over the Nation of Domination and was kind of changing from Rocky Maivia to
The Rock. Yeah, yeah.
So
the
this
final
was
boss. As
the final boss. Listen, engage. And it was so, that's weird. That whole remix of the theme is strange.
It's fucking terrible, by the way, as well.
The Rock's current heel theme.
It's terrible.
No, it's amazing because it incorporates the 2003 Hollywood Rock heel theme, which is the greatest heel theme of all time.
I just love the original.
But the whole point of that, the whole point of that original heel theme from 2003, if I can just sidetrack for a second, as I knew I would. The best part about that is, like, when he first debuted, like, they played the intro to that for, like, it's got to be like 2.5 minutes.
It's
This is just pissing off the crowd so much. Yeah. It's magical. And this track fucking rules. Anyway, back to 1998, Chris Warren Band opening. And again, we have to remember, guys, that Americans love their patriotism.
Oh my God.
They don't want it fucked with.
No.
And I guess this was not. Did it go down as they intended, do we think? Like, people hated this, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was
widely. And of
course,
the lads are like, you know, they're doing their.
And counterculture.
We're so cool.
We're against the authority.
We're against the machine, like, diet version. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, you know, he's not a good singer anyway.
No.
But live, even worse. And they're like, it almost sounds like they're deliberately like spiking their instruments into the ground. And it's kind of like, yeah, what are you going to fucking do about it? And, you know, people weren't happy.
It's, I mean, the amount of Americana and like gung-ho patriotism that I saw over the weekend where they played like two or three different versions of American National. Where I was sat on the Saturday night was beside the American flag, as in like where they fly the flag 24/7 above the stadium is where we were sat. That's how high up we were. It's crazy how much of an obsession there is with, they would cut to scenes of the military in wrestling things, whatever. And sure, they had like tribute to the troops and stuff like that. Like there was there was a while where, because I think, wasn't it that SmackDown was the first live broadcast after 9/11 or something like that. There was like a thing where
sounds like it could have been.
I think it aired the 13th or something like that, or the 14th of September. And WWE took on this big, massive kind of like pro-America, like, and it always kind of had been before, but that was whenever it like really exemplified. But this is one of the first instances where they tried to kind of go against it, and it just really, really backfired.
And stuff like Undertaker being like, you know, if you don't love it, you can leave it. Like,
why is a zombie Undertaker being an American badass riding in on a motorcycle? Like, why? How does that make sense?
Because he's going to save America. So yeah, so the reaction to this was not good.
Can I, I'm going to jump in straight away with YouTube comments on the video of this.
Oh, so, I love this.
Full disclosure, we were talking about this
we're probably not going to get, you know, I buried my sweetheart today.
let me tell you, absolutely not. We're in for a completely different trip here. But yeah, so the quality of the video is so bad. It's someone recording a recording of the live footage on from an old TV on a cassette tape that's being played on an old television, and someone is recording that playback on a phone, and that's why it sounds awful.
I respect the hell out of it.
It's fantastic. But the top comment on this, right? People talking about this being edited out of the network. Hell, this was edited out of the home video releases in 98. Only way you have this is if you recorded the PPV live. And then underneath it, someone said, I've never seen this. I just bought a blank tape on eBay with WrestleMania 14 on it. And I was at WrestleMania 14 and I don't remember this, but wow, fart in a church. Holy shit.
Wow. Yeah, no, it's I don't know. I mean, like, did it need to be edited off the home video? Like, who hit the roof? You know, they were like, well, that didn't work.
We can't have this.
It's not a fucking snuff film.
It's not blasphemy. Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just leave,
but they
let,
are,
it,
yeah.
let it live.
But I'm surprised that it happened in the first place. It would cause so much of a problem. But yeah, a pretty solid pick. Can we have your number three, please?
My number three is a from the start of the Attitude Era to, I would say, the end of the Attitude Era. And yeah, it's I think you know who it's going to be.
Are you awake yet? Let me hear some noise.
Yeah, and you left out the part that they would always introduce them as WWE's favorite band. It's Limp Bizkit.
It's WWE's favorite band in the whole world.
They literally would say that as they announced them.
So that's from the whenever they introduced The Undertaker. This was the second time they performed that night. So they only got a favorite band for their second intro of the night.
Which WrestleMania is this?
This is WrestleMania 19, and that is Limp Bizkit performing the theme of WrestleMania 19, which was the song Crack Addict.
Crack Addict.
Which is just like it's just not a great, it's such a terrible track. Like, you know,
it's not good.
When I was looking up, so when I was trying to do the list,
Crack Addict, wake up. John Travolta. Imagine John Travolta fronting Limp Bizkit. That would be the greatest and worst thing to ever happen to humanity. That would be like such a singularity event that, like, forget the eclipse that happened this week that Jason Derulo looked at without wearing fucking glasses. You weird man.
Can we do like an AI if someone out there knows how to do those like Homer Simpson AI covers, please, for the love of Jesus, make a John Travolta one of this song.
Yeah, or any Limp Bizkit
and
song.
And send it to us.
Like something like, you know, Nookie.
I did it for the Nookie.
So I used to be a big Limp Bizkit fan, and this is around the time that my fandom began to drop off.
I can't imagine why. I can't understand what about this current output would make you feel like it's not really your thing anymore.
Just wasn't the same after 2001.
Listen, no one really was. When I was putting the list together, I was trying to pick songs that were like not just like bad performances, but like just like terrible. Because the thing is that performance is 6 minutes long, and that intro is so the bit that we cut there, whatever. That's like a minute in. Like it was just that one, two, the three, four, the time for like a minute straight. And
showmanship.
Like, if you're there, or if you're watching from home, whatever. And I'm going to touch on this later on as well, because there's a particular performance that really riles me up. If you're watching this and you have to sit for 6 minutes, and it was right after they had like announced their attendance records, but it's also a weird thing. Like, why are you cheering how much money the company that you're going to see
is making?
Like, imagine you went to a Man United game and they're like, Old Trafford is making the most money it's ever made. It's like, yeah, but like,
they've gotten even more hyper specific now. They're saying stuff like, you know, the biggest gate. Thanks, guys. And I'm like, thanks for your money, rubes.
Yeah.
You know, it's
like how many people were in the stadium. It's not how many tickets sold.
Also, how many times did you hear that fucking Weekend song?
Oh my God.
Last year,
there's a new one.
This year, because they must have signed some weird.
He's done three in a row now.
Multi-year deal.
What?
It's 5 years in a row.
That's fucking obscene.
The Weekend has the longest running streak at WrestleMania.
It's insane.
Fred Durst. Very upset.
He's the new Undertaker. He's got the longest running streak. Like, they must have signed some mega deal to be like, okay, we'll give you 5 WrestleManias in a row of just using his music as the official theme. Mm-hmm. And this year, it was
Gasoline.
Like, yeah, and it's like,
watch you sleep.
And it's like, oh my God. Yeah.
I heard that chorus so many times. And then when we were walking
every time
in,
like in between matches, they just play it. Oh, so I'm just like, oh, fuck.
And every time we were walking into the stadium and people were listening to it in their cars. And I was like, man, you're going to hear this like 20 times in the next
It's effective
like, four
marketing.
Hours.
So Limp Bizkit, who for a time had such a vice grip like a million-dollar dream sleeper hold over the wrestling world, WWE, to the point that, you know, to call back to Hugh's amazing t-shirt, Fred Durst was an unlockable character in the SmackDown video game.
Yeah. Like, and like,
with this rolling taunt, you know?
Oh, yeah. Keep, and we will keep rolling.
Yeah.
But as much as there is this, there's also stuff like the My Way promo, which is
astonishing.
It's the bet I have. So,
you heard our little tribute to it at the beginning of the show.
And I've listened to the song no less in the last week than about 30 times.
It's great.
It's genuinely good.
Yeah.
They have some genuinely good songs.
It's genuinely a good song.
Just going to put it out there.
But paired with the video and paired with what? Like the dialogue compared with the
emotion of it all.
It was the best.
But this, why is this bad?
it's just
meandering. It goes, it's not even a good song.
It's just a terrible song. And like, you know, and between that and the Roland performance that they did, which was like, they kind of like cut half the vocal, like whoever was meant to be doing the backup vocals just wasn't doing the vocals at all. So, you know, they're like, hands up a hand zone, but there was no backup. Like, it felt strange. And there was also all these like Fred Durst cosplayers like dancing behind whatever, and the dancing was like the choreograph, like, because they obviously, because Fred Durst had to dance as well, but it was easily one of the worst dance moves I've ever seen. It's literally him like jumping forward and then jumping back and then putting a single hand up, and like, it's just embarrassing. And then obviously the Undertaker comes out on his motorbike and awkwardly squaddles around the ring,
gives a fist bump or a nod to Fred Durst, his boy.
I mean, between the two performances,
it felt like the end of an era, though, because it did feel like Limp Bizkit's popularity is in decline at that point, and it just felt like it was over.
It was literally the end.
I mean, you know, culture,
and we've never really.
No, not really. No.
Well, this was the last.
This is 2003, by the way.
Which was Stone Cold's last ever match, other than the one that he did with Kevin Owens then, like 16 years later. But this was his retirement. Like, this was literally like the last time that people saw Stone Cold Steve Austin in his most popular form, like in the ring. And this is whenever Brock Lesnar, who became the new WWE champion and was kind of heralded as the new face.
And almost killed himself with the Shooting Star Press that he should not have done.
Crazy stuff. But it was, this was literally the end of an era for, this is the end of the Attitude Era for WWE. And now going into the ruthless aggression.
It got bad for a while.
This is where I checked out, by the way. Like, I was all in. Mm-hmm. Like, cashing in all of my chips for the Attitude Era. I remember like watching it in my grandparents' house, who had like, it was like the TV that like came in through the wall, like it had like the pipe or whatever you like to call it back then. And then after a certain time, though, one of the channels would just switch to wrestling. And I was like, oh my God.
Like a poltergeist situation.
Genuinely, it was fucking incredible. It was like bang on 7 o'clock at night. What's coming on? Monday Night Raw. Like, but it was like all these replays from whatever the previous week's event was. I would get it every time I was there, because I'd usually go over like on a weekend or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was like you say, but it was like Stone Cold retiring then. That's like absolutely when I checked out. Loved it. Mm-hmm. The WrestleMania 17, was that the one?
X7, yeah, that's the one.
That's the one with Stone Cold and The Rock, right?
Yeah.
It was that, I remember. Like, I didn't...
Widely referred to as the best WrestleMania ever, even though there's actually a lot of mid-card nonsense on that pay-per-view, but whatever.
But yeah, well, lifted out of the dirt by Stone Cold and The Rock. Yeah, it's having huge, having like the ultimate... The ultimate Clash of Titans, and this is absolutely where I checked out.
So, speaking of checking out, though, let's check out Hugh Carr's number two, your silver medal for this week.
And my silver medal for this week is, we're going a bit deeper into the Ruthless Aggression era here now. And
give me the year.
It was 2 years after this, so that's 2005.
Oh yeah, it's the WrestleMania that had the Peter Gabriel song "Big Time" as the theme music
when they went Hollywood.
WrestleMania goes Hollywood. No, yeah, it is. Is it?
It is. Hollywood.
Yeah, you're right. Sorry. And Big Time might have been the year later.
And there was a live performance there, which they had done before, and it didn't go well. So I don't know why they thought it would go well this time either.
That was half the lyrics of Triple H's best theme song.
Oh no, Granddad's got on the stage down the local pub again. It is, of course, Motorhead, and to give them their proper intro, it's "We are Motorhead, and we are here to kick your ass."
Yeah,
Motorhead doing Triple H's "The Game" theme, which, as you say, and I knew that they'd be here.
Yeah,
I just wondered which one would feature, because they originally did WrestleMania X7.
Yes,
Triple H versus Undertaker. They play him in. They do it here again, and on both occasions, Lemmy has no clue what the lyrics are to the song that he's written, clearly for a cash grab. But, you know, Triple H's favorite band, apparently, heavily associated with him, that theme song, The Game, and then his other one, King of Kings. Bangers, by the way, but, like, especially in a wrestling parlance, but, like, yeah, this is not... It's unintelligible.
I just don't get it. Like, because, like, what, like, what is going on there? Like what is he
completely
even
indecipherable? Like, it's just like.
But like they, so he did it 4 years before that. He did it, and it was bad.
I've broken Adam.
No, because what you said. When you said it's like unintelligible.
It is. It's really good. That's what we're saying. Play the game. Play me. No, there's nothing. There's no flow to this. It's like, oh, literally, words just stop existing.
But he did it 4 years before that. Like they, so like they so knew funny. That. They're
book
like,
him
here,
again.
Here, listen,
book him again. Here, he's a pro.
Listen, Lemmy. Look, listen. Last time you did it, didn't go so well. So maybe this time, could you just make sure?
I feel like he didn't rehearse it, Lemmy.
Yeah, I feel like he just didn't know what was going on. He's like, no problem at all. I'll get it right this time.
And look, I'm sure he was like, I'm sure he was much older at the time, like, and you know, performing the songs live for all those years kind of taking its toll, although maybe less of a toll because he's only performing half of them. But like, it was like, I don't know if it's very hard to forgive, isn't it?
Especially there's a moment where he teleports from the verse to the chorus and back, and I'm like, that's very impressive. That is flow state. Like, I've never seen before.
I did see there was, once again, the goldmine that is YouTube comments where people were defending this, being like, this
best
is
band
the
ever.
Oh, yeah. Best entrance ever.
I'm going to go live to the YouTube comments.
Greatest mania. But there's one there where it's
Lemmy,
like,
you were great. Flawless.
Flawless performance as
flawless
always.
Victory.
But there's one there where it's like, someone was like, what is he even doing? And your man, someone was like, oh no, it's the live version of the song. It's just how they would always perform it.
Well, and I
was
terribly.
Like, that's what I mean. I'm like, what are you on about? Like, this is
unfinished.
Yeah, exactly. That they didn't even know what the words to the track were.
It did make me wonder, like, if I went to a Motorhead show, which obviously I would never have done. Mm-hmm. Is this what a Motorhead show is like? Or are they just being like, you know what? We have no respect for this whatsoever. We are taking the money. Goodbye, Adam.
The YouTube comments are so good.
Of course they are. They never miss.
Only Lemmy can get away with forgetting his own lyrics. He's the fucking man.
Yeah, no, he's not.
But no, the best one.
Very forgiving, the metal community.
The best one is like several comments below this, and I'm actually going to have to genuinely spell it out because it's so funny. It's all about the game and how you PLFEEGJTNSDHEBTWTG354RBGH. RIP Lemmy.
Oh my god. It's just, it's astonishing work.
Oh, fucking
and they
hell.
Presumably got paid a lot of money.
Oh, they must have. They absolutely must have. They 100% have. There's also the thing about live performances as well, and it actually hasn't happened in a while, but that usually if a live performance happens for a wrestler, they almost always lose. It's a really common thing. I think there's only like a few instances where it doesn't. So the Godfather and D'Lo Brown lost in their fight. The Triple H lost in against the Undertaker when he got introduced in X7.
Lost here as well against Batista.
So it's a thing where it's almost a given that whoever is coming in with a live band is going to lose the match. It's very rarely. So like Rhea Ripley being the
Rey Mysterio, he had POD when he won.
He did. But that was
I can give you another one where someone lost, and I will say, and it was actually one of the best live performances, even though it was very clearly lip synced to some degree. Mm-hmm. Bray Wyatt's entrance for WrestleMania 30 against John Cena, and it has Mark Crozer, who wrote that song. What was it called? Live in Fear, I think. Yeah. It was
amazing track.
And that performance rules, even if it is, you know, they're clearly not fully playing live, but it's fantastic. And did you watch that documentary, the Bray Wyatt documentary?
I haven't watched it yet.
I cried a lot.
So every time, a lot. For context, for anyone who doesn't know, Bray Wyatt was a wrestler who suddenly passed away there two years ago?
Last year.
And just out of nowhere, just passed away. And a lot of his thing was about being like this kind of like a cult leader. There was the Wyatt family. There was, you'll always find me in the sky. You'll always, you know, there's all these really spooky imagery, but also this really like prescient and really like almost like foreboding kind of stuff. Whatever.
And the color red in a world of black and white.
Yeah, and
kind of stuff.
There was always a thing every time they would play the trailer for that documentary. There was a thing where he would say that, like, you know, he was among the Fireflies, and what it would be is that all the fans would put up the torches on their phone and kind of like wave them around as if they were like, you know, like the Fireflies in a swamp.
Yeah.
And every time they showed that
documentary or the trailer for it, everyone would do it, so it was like 70 odd thousand people doing it or whatever, and it got me so bad every single time.
Yeah,
it's so
it's heartbreaking. Yeah, the documentary is worth a look though. It's called Becoming Immortal, I think
anyway. So
I guess Motorhead are obviously immortal in their own way. They will live in infamy thanks to performances like these
forever and always.
Before we move on, I just want to say there was a YouTube comment there was some very funny ones that I can't say out loud because they're just, it's all phonetics, but what one of the comments said was that Lemmy personally credited Triple H for introducing Motorhead to a whole new audience of a younger generation. Yeah, I just thought that was like a really
and I will repay him by
performing the worst,
sabotaging his entrance twice.
Probably not the best payback ever, but also at the same time I just thought that was like a really nice thing.
I think he said since Triple H has said that it's been his favorite entrances is the ones that he's done with Motorhead, which in fairness is fair enough. Like when you're in that zone or whatever,
concept
you're probably,
cool, execution
lacking.
You're probably not thinking about, you're probably not hearing the lyrics even, but you're just hearing this that bass or whatever. I mean, it is an unbelievable track. Like the you can't fault the band. You can't fault the instrumentation.
Okay, so listen, you've posed now for a bunch. You've built up your finisher meter. All you have to do now is hit the L1 button.
Very good.
And hit us with your number one.
I will hit you with the number one. But there's one very quick thing that I want to touch before we or a few very quick things that I want to touch before we get to the finale. WrestleMania 21 was the first time that John Cena ever won a world title, won a title.
He won a title at WrestleMania 20 against Big Show.
He won the
US title.
Yeah, the first time he won the world title was against JBL in 21.
That's correct. You said our title. I'm being pedantic.
As you should be. Listen, wrestling fans have to be. It was the first ever Money in the Bank match, which is now iconic in its own right. But it's also, just as we were talking about like tragedies and stuff, whatever, it was Eddie Guerrero's last WrestleMania, which is, I think, is always a bit mad to think about where he would be and what he would have done in that era of stuff, whatever, where it was the year of I'm Your Pappy and all that kind of crack. But finally, my number one, I watched this live. It was one of the first WrestleManias I watched this live. And knowing what I know now about it, it infuriates me to a degree that I don't even think, you're not ready for how angry I am about this. It really gets me. Can I go off for a second?
As in leave the show?
No. No,
you said all you need to say with that clip.
This was 10 minutes of Kid Rock uninterrupted during the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. I had just started watching wrestling maybe 2 years before this. WrestleMania 23 was the first WrestleMania that I watched. My cousin had it on DVD. I watched 24 and I was like, oh my God, I'm hooked. 25 then happens.
And by the way, I should say, like Rudy Kinsler, for example, you don't need to jump in and correct Hugh when he said 20th anniversary. It is the 25th edition. WWE do that themselves. Mm-hmm. They said the WrestleMania 40 this year was the 40th anniversary. Mm-hmm. It's technically the 40th edition. Let's just let them have their thing. You know?
They have invented their own history so many times.
So technically Hugh is correct.
It was this for 10 minutes where Kid Rock, Hall of Famer, WWE Hall of Famer, along with Donald Trump, along with Snoop Dogg,
Mr. T,
along with Mr. T, all WWE Hall of Famers,
Drew Carey
is a WWE Hall of Famer, performed a live medley of, I never know how to say this,
Ba-wa-ta-ba.
Famously featured in an opening scene in Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift.
Famously featured in the closing scene of the debut episode of The Shield.
Oh my
God. The amazing television show The Shield.
That's better.
Sierra Hotel, Indigo Echo, Lima, Delta.
Shield.
So it was Ba-wa-ta-ba. It was Rock and Roll Jesus. It was Cowboy. It was All Summer Long, as you heard there.
Yeah.
and it was so hot with two T's afterwards. It was 10 minutes of uninterrupted Kid Rock.
He got all that into 10 minutes? Pretty impressive.
Well, do you know what happened immediately after? Do you remember what happened immediately afterwards?
Well, am I right in saying that he was the lead-in for the Divas Battle Royal?
You would be 100% correct.
My memory isn't gone. Good stuff.
If
yes.
we had to talk about the level of sleaze that was in WWE...
And yeah, there's only one man to do it, and his name was Kid Rock. Yeah,
no better man to do it. But
in sleaze, yeah.
So as So Hot played, all the women walked out and got into the ring for a 25... And diva, so using the word diva for a woman like wrestler back at the time as well, it was, and there was a Divas Championship, it was ridiculous. But they were doing a thing where they were crowning a Miss WrestleMania, the 25th anniversary show. Do you remember who won the 25th anniversary show?
It was a man.
It was Santino Marella, dressed up as Santina Marella,
yeah.
In drag for laughs. And
the crowd loved it.
It was the absolute
This is
worst.
Only 15 years ago as well. This is like 2000. Yeah,
crazy. It was later than... is permissible.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah, thereabouts.
It was crazy. And do you want to know something? And I only learned this over the weekend. I should say,
sorry to interrupt, not that it was permissible in the first place, but
no,
far past
but,
the point.
But where you would have, like, I mean, you saw that we opened this with WrestleMania 2000 with Pimpin' Ain't Easy. Like, you would have thought that would be something that would have happened in that era, but that had happened, you know, like
a full decade
years.
On. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly my point, Joe.
But what I learned this weekend, or what I learned actually just like yesterday, was that so John Cena, popular movie man and former wrestler,
that's what they call him when he goes on TV shows, popular movie man.
that's what's on his LinkedIn,
Jonathan
actually.
Jonathan Cena.
He was in one of the main events of this WrestleMania. He was himself, Edge, and the Big Show wrestling for the World Heavyweight Championship, and they had to cut 30 minutes out of the performance, or they had to cut 30 minutes from the match because of the overrun that had happened. And he blamed, like, in this, there was a video that he didn't blame, but he was like, oh, it was because of how long another match that happened that year, which was Shawn Michaels versus The Undertaker, which is widely regarded as one of the best WrestleMania matches of all time. I think 26 is better.
Second one's better.
But that they had to cut time out of it. And he was like, oh, it's because they went so long and, you know, we're so, you know, such an honor, whatever. If you had just cut that feckin' 10 minutes of Kid Rock out of this, whatever, if I had to choose 10 minutes of a Cena, now in fairness, Cena was not very popular at the time, but if I had to choose between an extra 10 minutes of a John Cena wrestling match and a full Kid Rock performance leading into one of the worst
people go
jokes
to WrestleMania for different reasons, Hugh.
Who bought their tickets for WrestleMania the previous, like,
someone
August?
With a fucking Confederate flag on their pickup truck. Someone
They were cutting to the crowd, and there were some people who were excited about the sight of Kid Rock. It wouldn't have been me. I was just like, and you know what the thing was, is like, I was like getting into wrestling, and I had stayed up. I was over at my auntie's house. It was like a big thing that we were like, you know, we were going to, you know, I was allowed to stay up and watch this. I was so excited. And then it was 10 minutes
of the greatest musician
of Kid Rock,
the greatest emoters of all time.
Bawa Taba is a pretty good song.
Yeah, yeah, pretty energy infusing. I do have the YouTube comments.
Great, excellent. Legend.
So, for one of the first ones, and this is absolutely insane that someone is in the rational mind typing this. I wished Undertaker was the American Badass during this time so Kid Rock would perform his theme song.
No, terrible.
And then the other one that I saw that I really liked, did you really sing Sweet Home Alabama in Texas?
No, he sang All Summer Long, guys. It's an original.
It's a totally different composition.
It doesn't take two really famous songs and just mash them together lazily. No, it's a Kid Rock original.
And then I have one more, and I can only assume that Hugh Carr wrote this. That was boring, all in capital letters, 3 exclamation marks. Just the WrestleMania theme was okay. The rest was unnecessary.
Yeah, it's true. But this top five was very necessary, I will say. So thank you, Hugh, for braving your jet lag and for shaking off the cobwebs of the best week of your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get emotional at the end when Cody Rhodes finished the story, like ring announcer Samantha Irvin?
That was
a great bit.
It was beautiful.
She's getting some back. I thought she was great. Her introduction for the main event was incredible.
She's an amazing, like, she's
puts her whole body into it.
She's
it's great.
The new voice.
Been doing
generation.
It for years though, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
A long time now. Like
Samantha Irvin, she's newish, isn't she?
Who was doing it around the, like, John Cena,
like Lillian Garcia?
Oh, okay,
was there,
right.
And,
she was great too. But Samantha Irvin is like the new voice of the generation. Like,
it's great.
Ridiculous. Like,
really.
I got a little bit emotional. I was watching it at like 4 a.m. and I actually was like, oh God. I was like, he did it.
I got. so stupid.
Just like the end of the Breakfast Club. Just
he handed the belt to his mother because he couldn't hand it to his dead father. Yeah. I was like, oh, come on.
It was very. I did get a bit emotional.
Like, Cody Rhodes should be like the embodiment of everything that I hate about America. Mm-hmm. Right down to the fucking tattoo.
The neck, the American flag.
And there's always something a bit heelish about him. And even on Monday when he was doing his promo, I was like, okay, stop gloating now.
It's like, 45 minute uninterrupted.
That was insane. But I was like, you know what? This has been the investment of a big long story. Mm-hmm. Everyone played their part very, very well. It was the ending that you wanted to see. The hero vanquished the evil villain. There was lots of, you know, cinematic layers that people are loving. I thought it was done really, really well. So yeah, so I hope that you were weeping uncontrollably in stadium.
I wouldn't say that I was weeping uncontrollably, but I definitely did feel a lump in my throat watching it happen, because it's that kind of thing where, depending on where you start from or where you look from, the story could be upwards of 40 years in the making. Like, it could be something that, like, because his dad never won the big title in WWE when he was there or whatever. So you could almost go like from there, or you could go from whenever he first started. I think it's like the longest time ever since WWE debut to world championship title reign or whatever. Like, there's so many ways, there's so many areas that you get into, there's so many reasons why it means so much. And I'm obviously a very big wrestling fan, and I love all forms of wrestling, and was very excited about All Elite Wrestling, whatever, like the competitor that he himself set up along with the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega. And just watching that whole story then ending up with this, you know, huge celebration. And I think it's one of those things as well where, and we were saying this to the boys, so it was myself and two of my mates that went over, like, we couldn't believe we were there. Do you know, it's that kind of a thing. Like, it is a once-in-a-lifetime trip, I think, for me. Like, and I just can't get over the fact that I was there. And that also that the music performances were actually not too bad on the overall, other than Lil Wayne.
He didn't even do that much. But no, very nicely put. RIP Dusty Rhodes, RIP Bray Wyatt, and RIP, hopefully, the career of Kid Rock. however, you know, every week on the show, my own personal main event is, my own personal Samantha Urban is the one and only Sonic Architect.
I'm still Sonic Architect.
Thank God you're still Sonic Architect.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I, do you know what? This week was great, because I, knowing what was coming and just getting that, like, the My Way promo, like, you know, and you kind of bringing it up and as like, oh, let's do like a thing where we, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go back and like just like relive 3 years of my childhood here. And it was the best. Like, I,
wrestling is cool again, guys.
It's so transportative though. Like, back then I remember, like, it was like the world was watching Stone Cold and The Rock. Like, I'd find it very hard to go somewhere and like say, do you, like, everyone knows who The Rock is now, obviously, because of like filaments, like, whatever. But as a wrestler, first,
100%.
He will always be in my head. And then Stone Cold Steve Austin, coolest of all time. The Undertaker, everybody loves The Undertaker. Mm-hmm. Like,
I do not love The Undertaker.
Well, not as a real person. Life.
I do not love fucking Blue Lives
you don't love
Matter.
Mark Calloway.
Fuck off.
Yeah, but
what a loser.
Also, he showed up very oddly.
I did lose my mind at that.
Didn't even put his gear on.
No.
Ridiculous. Anyway, listen, like, we could talk about this all day, and I feel like I've already probably tested the listeners' patience with this episode. please stay with the podcast. Please tell a friend about it. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple and all those places
that
if you
helps
can.
With visibility,
Spotify.
So
it actually does. So please do that. And it's patreon.com/noencore if you want bonus content. Hugh Carr, you will be back again. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. As I said at the start of the show, there's no one else I'd rather spend my post jet lag time with. So I'm glad for the invite.
I'm honored. It's like a title belt being handed into my loving embrace right now. My name is Dave Hanratty. This has been Noencore. There will be no encore, and I guess we've finished the story.
On this adrenaline in my soul. Something. Cody Rhodes.
I can't remember. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Yeah! This time I'ma let it all come out. This time I'ma stand up and shout. I'ma do things my way. It's my way. My way or the highway. This time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily.
to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.